This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In December, the Washington State Supreme Court overturned a robbery conviction because a critical piece of evidence was, it ruled, obtained illegally. A mother eavesdropped in on a phone conversation between her 14-year-old daughter and the 17-year-old male who would later be convicted of the crime. Washington is one of 11 states that require the consent of all parties before a phone conversation can be recorded or intercepted, but the court's decision that the privacy law extends to parents and their children pushed the state into a larger controversy about how far parents can or should go to keep tabs on their offspring. And technology is changing that debate, creating new forms of surveillance at homes, cars, computers, and schools, as well as the phone. Later in the program, a new and unflattering portrait of Queen Elizabeth I, the true story of the Spanish Armada. But first, parents, kids, technology, and privacy. If you're a parent, call and tell us what you do to keep track of your kids and why. If you're a teenager, what do your parents do and how do you feel about it? Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We're joined first by Washington State Senator Pam Roach. She's introduced a bill that would authorize the monitoring of a child's telephone conversation by parents or guardians. Senator Roach joins us now from the State House in Olympia. Thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Well, it's a pleasure. Good to be with you.
Why did you introduce this bill?
Well, I introduced it to buoy up the position of parents in their homes in dealing with their children, quite frankly. What the Washington state law says would is a misdemeanor, and it could be a fine imposed if a parent listens to an underage child's phone calls.
So in theory, at least, the mother who overheard her daughter's conversation with a guy who was evidently a robber, she's the criminal.
Well, yeah. And her testimony wouldn't have been helpful anyway in the prosecution of the boyfriend. But the fact is, it was found that her listening to her daughter's conversation was something that she should not have done by law.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's just simply the wrong message to be sending young people. The parents need to be able to monitor if they feel it's necessary. They have the responsibility to parent, and they have the accountability. If a child does something wrong, I mean, it's the parents who are accountable.
What kind of responses did you hear from your constituents after the Supreme Court there in Washington State overturned that conviction?
Well, actually, very quickly I introduced the bill, but I would say that even young people are in favor of changing the law. They don't believe it should be against the law. They say, well, gee, my parents are paying the phone bill, and maybe I need to be helped every once in a while. There are some young people that have not weighed in on this, so I don't know how they're thinking, but by and large, the bill has been received very, very well here in Washington State by parents and most young people.
Mm-hmm. Now, some young people might argue that, look, you just if you snoop on me, I'm just going to find another way. I'm going to go out and sneak around.
Well, you know, and then there's the argument, too, that part of good parenting is knowing what your kids are doing so that you can direct their activities, and that some young people actually want their parents to direct activity so they can use it as an excuse not to do the things that they know aren't right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, your measure, as I understand it, would just allow parents to monitor their children's calls. There's a version in the state legislature, the assembly there in Washington, that would allow the parents to record those calls.
What's happened to my very simple bill, which actually, this may surprise you, was actually supported by the American Civil Liberties Union. They support parents being able to parent minor children. The Prosecutors Association decided to take my bill and amend it, making it very broad, and in doing so, disrupting some of our wiretap law, which means the bill is in trouble. So what I'm doing now is working to get the prosecutors to back off, let me have the bill as it was stated, so that we have a simple correction to state law, and therefore allowing parents to parent without feel they're breaking law,
mm-hmm.
by doing what they know instinctively is correct, which is watching out for their children and the activities of those children.
Well, the difficulties of getting a bill through or not aside, are you in favor of the measures that would allow parents to record their children's calls or intercept their mail?
I've taken no position on that. It hasn't been before my committee, but the issue that I am very much in favor of is supporting parents' rights. And I think that we're going to have we need to have better parenting all around to begin with, to have this cloud over the heads of parents that they might think, even that they would think, that listening to a child's conversation would be illegal is just unconscionable. Government should be supporting good parenting, not trying to destroy it, which is what happens when a young person comes home having learned about the law in school and says, "Well, you can't be listening to my phone. That you're doing something against the law. If you're doing something against the law, what's wrong with my doing something against the law?" You see, we're dealing with adolescents here, and that's how they may construe the message that, in fact, it is right now in the state a misdemeanor to be listening to their phone calls.
And teenagers, certainly, many of them have a legalistic turn of mind when it comes to...
Well, having raised five kids, I can say that most children, you really don't even think about listening to a phone call. But every once in a while, that instinct may be that you should find out who that is it's called. Let me give you, for example, a grown man calls and they ask for your daughter, Emily. And you're wondering, who is that? Well, you listen, and it happens to be the soccer coach. Okay, fine. But what if it's the guy that she met in the chat room last night? The fact is that parents need to have the freedom, because they have the responsibility, to actually parent.
Senator Roach, thanks very much for joining us today.
You bet. Take care.
Pam Roach, state senator from Washington State, with us from the Senate office building there at the State House in Olympia. Washington State's debate about eavesdropping on phones and opening kids' mail certainly could have happened a generation or even two ago. New technology, though, is changing the landscape of parental monitoring, from radio frequency chips in school IDs to video cameras in the family car. 11 families in Minnesota tried out such a system recently, and joining us now to tell us more about how that works is Rusty Weiss, Director of Product Management at DriveCam Video Systems. He's with us from his office in San Diego, California. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for having me.
What's a DriveCam?
It's a small device that fits into a program that captures video 24/7 in a vehicle. It looks out the front of the vehicle from behind the rearview mirror, and from that same location, it captures from outside shoulder of the front seat passenger to the outside shoulder of the other front seat passenger.
Is this a little like those cameras that you sometimes see police videos shot from?
It's a little bit different. This one, it is recording all the time, but it doesn't save anything that it captures unless G-forces act on the vehicle.
So if there's a violent turn or a sudden stop?
Correct.
And in that case, how much does it save?
It saves the previous 10 seconds and the following 10 seconds, which works great for coaching drivers. Both our success, obviously, has been with fleet drivers. And what I saw, I came from the customer side before I joined DriveCam, and so involved with fleets, I was amazed at what we were able to achieve on the fleet side of things.
Delivery drivers or something like that?
I was working for Mayo Medical Transport out of Rochester, Minnesota, and we changed the behaviors of paramedics and EMTs. And what I saw there, I thought, oh, if there's a group of kids I've seen on ambulance calls before that need help, it certainly is teenagers. And so I met with some parents through some schools that were supportive, and we tested the technology in kind of a feasibility project.
So what kind of reactions did you get from the parents and from the teenagers who were being monitored?
Yeah, and I was really shocked, not so much from the parent side, but from the teens, as I'll talk about in a little bit. But on the parent side, what surprised me most was I knew they would enjoy the technology if it worked at all like it did on the fleet side. And that's what I heard from them. I got them all together in a focus group meeting about halfway through the 26-week project. And they reported things that the relationship with their teenager actually got better, that they were kind of in the world of he said, she said, and subjective concerns that they had about their teens driving.
Oh, and then it gets to issues of trust and who do you believe and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and the parents at times were forced to, take somebody's word that maybe wasn't the actual truth, which, breaks down that teen-parent relationship as well. With the video, what they said was it was an objective third party in the conversation. Not wearing a seatbelt visible in the video was not wearing a seatbelt.
I see.
It wasn't some friend complaining that they'd seen him.
And
the teen side, I was surprised. Had a corporate sponsor agree to donate some gift certificates for the teens I had in the pilot project. And when I sent those out to the teens again at about the halfway point, I got thank you notes back that said, hey, this isn't all that bad, once I got used to it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm using it now to earn more allowance. I'm using it to get more nights out per week. And the objective voice actually helped them as well. And that was a real shocker to me.
Because they can then show their parents that they did things safely.
Right. Physics is what determines what triggers the camera. It creates this real even measuring stick across all those teens. And when they're not triggering it, and some of their peers are, they can, you know, very clearly and accurately say, hey, Mom, Dad, I'm as good a driver as most of these teens. And in fact, the numbers on this group of 12 show me that I'm better.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you get evidence that it did make the kids drive more safely?
Yeah, we went from, it was interesting, the parents, I surveyed the parents before, and they indicated that their kids wore their seatbelts 95 or 100% of the time. In the first 2 weeks of looking at the clips that came in, seatbelt use was actually about 36 to 40%, which
wow.
Matches the studies that are out there. But by about week six, we had 100% compliance with seatbelt. And for parents, again, it was very simple. You wear your seatbelt. That's our rule with the car. If you don't wear your seatbelt, then I'm taking the keys away.
I wonder, in moments of, fast braking or fast turns, did it catch any other misdeeds by kid drivers?
Well, I have a sense that the music teens listen to is a privilege they enjoy because the camera gives some feedback when it does record, and they would frequently, I'd see them turning down the radio, turning down the CD, and some of the language in those CDs, you know, for our times now certainly would be shocking to parents, just as when I listened to music when I was a teenager, what I listened to probably would have been shocking. But what I found was I think that really was part of the consequence for the teens for not keeping the light green on the camera. And so not only were there consequences if the parents took away their driving privileges, but they might also take away that CD or something like that. So they, and again, talking to the teens, I said, why did you all stop having these events? You know, and again, physics runs the camera. The only way not to trigger the camera is to pay attention when you drive. And they said, well, we didn't want Mom or Dad, you know, knowing which CDs we were listening to in the car and things. So it was really interesting. What surprised me was the project showed that the teens were able to kind of take control of the situation and protect their privacy by driving and paying attention while they did it.
Rusty Weiss, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And good luck with the DriveCam.
Thank you.
Rusty Weiss, Director of Product Management at DriveCam Video Systems. He spoke with us from his office in San Diego. By the way, you can see videos captured using the DriveCam technology at our website at npr.org. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about teens and surveillance with research on developing trust between parents and kids and whether that's affected by surveillance at all. We'll also take your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we're talking about parents, teens, technology, and privacy. Many argue that parents have both the right and the responsibility to parent. Where's the line, though, between responsible parenting and snooping? How far should parents go to learn what their kids are doing, and how much privacy can kids expect? Parents, teens, we want to hear from you. What works? What doesn't? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is TOTN@npr.org. Joining us now is Lawrence Steinberg, a professor of psychology at Temple University in Philadelphia, the author of The 10 Basic Principles of Good Parenting, and an expert on psychological development during adolescence. Nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
I'm very well. Interestingly, we were just talking with the guy with the DriveCam technology and said that the presence of an absolutely independent third party monitoring what happened in that car, in effect, did increase the level of trust between parents and kids. What do you think?
I'm skeptical of that. I'm not skeptical of the fact that it improves kids' driving, because I think we know that giving people online feedback when they're performing tasks is the best way to correct poor behavior. But it doesn't seem to me really plausible that this intervention increased the amount of trust between teens and parents. It might have made them fight less about the teens' driving behavior.
What's happening in the parent-child relationship when the adult feels the need to keep a very close eye on their teenager?
Well, I think all parents are, of course, concerned that their kids stay out of harm's way, that they don't get into trouble with the law, that they're doing well in school, that they're functioning in healthy ways. But I think that at times parents can cross the line and become too intrusive and do so in a way that disrupts the trust and the integrity of the parent-child bond. I'd much rather see a relationship between a parent and child based on trust than one that's based on suspicion. And it seems to me that parents need to distinguish between whether they're doing something like this because they have real evidence and good reason to think that their kid needs this kind of surveillance, or whether they're just doing it Because they think this is good parenting, because it's not good parenting.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Patrick joins us from San Antonio.
Hi.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi. I'm actually an 18-year-old and just about to leave for college. And my parents never monitored anything I did as a kid. And I guess now, in retrospect, I'm kind of like, wow, that was dumb. But I didn't mind it when I was a kid, of course. You know, I got away with all kinds of stuff. And now I kind of wish they had, especially with some of this new technology, like that drive thing. It would have been great, because I kind of stole the car a couple times. I didn't even have a license yet, and I'd steal the car. And you know, that would have been great, because then I would have been caught, and I wouldn't have gotten into some of the trouble I had. And so I'm very pro monitoring your kids, actually, even as a kid.
Hmm.
And so.
So if you have kids, you might monitor them a lot more closely than you were monitored.
Oh, definitely, because I was a bad kid, and I'll admit that. And I wish I hadn't been. And I don't want my kids to do some of the things I did. And so I think it was kind of naive on my parents' part. And, I mean, I didn't actually do anything life-threatening or anything, but it's still a problem.
Well, stealing the car before you had a license is definitely life-threatening.
Yeah, well, that's for sure.
Lawrence Steinberg.
Well, I think monitoring is a very good thing. I think the question is how you do it. And if I were a parent and I wanted to install one of those devices in my child's car, I would tell my child that it was there. I think that that's a fair thing to do. I think, on the other hand, eavesdropping on your children's telephone calls when they don't know that you're doing that is really a breach of trust in the parent-child relationship.
Okay. Patrick, good luck at college.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Let's get another caller in, and this is Diane. Diane's with us from Cincinnati.
Hi.
Hi.
I have to agree with Patrick. I've been an educator for 33 years, and I've seen a lot of kids whose parents have little or no control with them when they're in first grade and kindergarten, and they're already saying, I don't know what to do with this child. And so by the time they get to junior high and high school, they're totally out of control. And I think that kids that parents don't know what to do with, a little bit of monitoring might not be a bad thing if it's going to keep them out of trouble. Because let's face it, if they do something like bring a gun to school and shoot somebody, the news media, the law, everybody's going to be saying, why didn't you know this?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you know your child was in trouble? Why didn't you do something to help them? Why didn't you do something to stop them?
And
the parents are responsible, but everybody wants to draw their hands and stop them. And in a lot of cases, it's because everyone wants to say that children are adults and give them adult responsibilities and adult licenses in a lot of ways. When they're not adults, they are children, and they need guidance, and they need to be told,
mm-hmm.
this is not all right, and they need someone to say no, and they need that person to know what's going on. And if they're not communicating with them, the adult needs to find out what's going on.
Go ahead, Lawrence.
Well, I mean, I'm in agreement with what the caller is saying, in the sense that one of the basic principles of good parenting is that you're involved in your child's life and that you set rules and that you have limits on your child's behavior. I think, though, that the best way to know what's going on in your child's life is to have a long history of a warm and trusting relationship. In the studies that have been done of parental monitoring and kids' behavior, and they clearly say that kids behave better when their parents monitor them and know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But in those studies, what you find is that the most effective way of monitoring is when the child tells the parent what he or she is doing, not when the parent snoops and spies on the child.
So it's not technology, it's the dinner table.
That's right. It's at the dinner table. It's in the time that you spend together. You know, putting a bugging device in your child's room, car, phone, whatever, is not a substitute for having a good relationship. And that's what concerns me about these sorts of approaches.
Mm-hmm.
That's great, but how many parents sit down and eat dinner with their children on a regular basis?
Not
if
enough.
If you're a parent and you work and you live in poverty and you hardly ever get to see your child, how do you do all this?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's easy to say all these things, but we don't live in the 1950s where mom is home and dad is home and kids have these kind of relationships. It's not that kind of world anymore. And kids didn't have cars when they were 16 years old and drove themselves to school and had all the things that kids have today. So maybe parents need a little more help than they did 30 years ago.
Thanks very much for the call, Diane. Lauren Steinberg, would you agree that there are some circumstances under which, you know, maybe some intrusive monitoring is the right way to go?
Sure. I mean, if I had a child who was constantly getting into trouble or had some kind of problems, let's say a drug problem that I knew about, and I had tried to deal with those problems through an attempt to improve the quality of our relationship, the quality of my parenting, and those attempts had failed, I might look at one of these other approaches. But I certainly wouldn't start there.
Let's get another caller in. This is Kat, and Kat's with us from Spearfish, South Dakota.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. I'm just calling in to say that I do agree with that guy that parents should keep tabs on their children, and, you know, it's just better that way. You know, and I'm actually in a English class that is doing an essay on this very subject.
Huh.
And
you're taking notes?
Huh?
You're taking notes?
Yes, I am. And it was on the PBS Frontline edition that they did on the Lost Children of Rockdale County, where the parents had they just basically let their kids run wild, had no clue what their kids were doing as far as the sex and the drugs and the running around and whatnot. And I was just like, I mean, some of the interviews that they had with the parents, I was sitting there, I was thinking, you know, I'm a 17-year-old kid, and I want to slap these parents because they're being so ignorant and stupid.
Well, Kat, you must know a lot of other 17-year-olds, though, who, if their parents were monitoring them, would figure a way around it.
Oh, yeah, I do. And, you know, some of them, they don't seem to understand that their parents aren't doing it to be annoying or being, they're just doing it because they love them, and they should understand that. My mom keeps really close tabs on me, but it's like, you know, I know what she's doing, and I know why, and I'm okay with it. But, you know, as far as, like,
Do you want your mom listening to your phone calls?
Oh, I don't care. She can. She can. If she's listening to the radio right now, I'd hit her because she's at work. But she shouldn't be listening to the radio right now. She should be working.
Well, I'll have to differ with you there. You should always be listening to the radio. But
works as a telecom collector, so
she might be listening to other things. Lauren Steinberg, the two teenagers we've had on thus far disagree with you.
Well, not really. I mean, they say that it's important for parents to keep tabs on their kid, and I agree with that 100%. And I agree with the last caller in the sense that when your parents are monitoring you and you feel that it's done out of love and concern, your experience of it is very different than if you feel that it's being done out of suspiciousness and mistrust. Which goes back to the point that I made earlier, that a strong parent-child relationship, which includes parental monitoring, is based on a warm and trusting relationship, not a distant and suspicious one.
Mm-hmm. Kat, good luck with the paper.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Rachel. Rachel's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi. I raised two boys on my own as a single parent. And that was a hard job, but I was able to monitor them without, you know, the needs of surveillance, mostly because starting out when they were real young, I gave them a real good, strong set of ethics to live by.
Mm-hmm.
And then I trusted them to talk to me when they had problems and whatnot and when things came to them. And they were always pretty good about that. And plus, I also, you know, had a whole network of neighbors, you know, who would keep me informed if my kid stepped out of line, and I'd sit them down and I'd talk to them about it and let them know, you know, that I had this whole system of neighbors, you know?
Yeah, sometimes you don't need a newfangled technology to do this. There are other ways that people have done this for a long time.
It takes some effort, though. It takes people to actually do the work, to spend the time with their kids. Even as a single parent, you know, and working a full-time job and all of that, I found time to be with my kids. I didn't go out and play on the weekends. I spent them with my kids.
Well, Neil, I'm glad that we finally found a caller who agrees with me. Because
no, totally.
Spending time together and starting early, which is what this caller's a very important point is,
mm-hmm.
is that building a relationship when your child is young, instilling a sense of values, and then trusting your child. One thing that's not being said is what the downside is of always monitoring and keeping tabs on your child in a suspicious, mistrustful way. And that is going to have a harmful effect on the relationship. So, yes, you might prevent your child from doing some bad things that your child might otherwise do, but there are going to be costs involved in that, and you have to balance an adolescent's normal need for independence with a parent's desire to monitor and keep tabs.
Rachel, thank you very much for the call.
Just one more thing.
Sure.
Just one more thing. In the movie Footloose,
yeah,
the Reverend says, "How can you trust your? How can your kids become trustworthy if you don't trust them?"
He says that at the end of the movie.
Yeah, right. He says, you have to be able to trust your kids so they can become trustworthy.
Well,
and I believe in that totally.
Okay, thanks very much, Rachel.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye.
We're talking today about privacy and snooping, about teens and technology, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Lawrence Steinberg, I know there's a new research about the brain which says in adolescence it is still developing, particularly in areas of impulse control and things like that. Does that argue that parents should take on increased responsibility for teens' behavior?
I think it argues that parents ought not to just assume that because their kids have become adolescents that they can step back and not do the kind of monitoring and limits thing that they've been doing beforehand. I think what we know is from the new brain research is that kids probably need parental guidance and limit setting and structure throughout the adolescent years. But the new brain research also says that the brain needs stimulation during the adolescent years to develop in healthy ways. And if you lock your child in a closet or lock your child, psychologically, in an environment where your child can't exercise any independence or any autonomy, you may be slowing down your child's intellectual development by doing that.
All right. Let's talk now with Jessica. Jessica's on the line with us from Belmont, North Carolina.
Yes.
Hi. You're on the air, Jessica. Go ahead.
I actually agree with your guest that parents trying to have so much control over their children and invading their privacy by monitoring them in some way without telling them is actually very harmful and destructive to the parent-child relationship.
Can you give us an example?
Yes. I myself am a parent now and would never dream of doing this to my child because my father did it to me when I was a teenager. He tapped my phone and recorded my phone calls without me knowing. And I feel like with him trying to have such a heavy hand with his discipline, it actually forced me to behave even worse than I would have if there had been some trust between the two of us. And when I came down to it and I found out that he had been tape recording my phone calls for months, I ended up moving out of the house because of it. I mean, it really was such a blow to our relationship that I couldn't be there in the house with him anymore. It was too much. Too big a blow to our relationship, really.
Mm-hmm. So, and how old are your children now?
My child now is 2.
You're a ways away from this.
Yeah, I'm a way away from this, but I can't, I mean, I was never behaving that badly as a child that I felt like I needed that sort of intense monitoring, and it ended up prompting me to act out even more because I felt like, if you're going to be watching what I'm doing, I might as well make it worth my while. You know, I'm going to be punished for it one way or the other, so I might as well make this.
Might as well get hung for a sheep as well as a lamb, Lawrence Steinberg.
Exactly.
And this is my point. I think that in cases where you know that your child is behaving badly, you may need to take these extra steps. But for a child who's growing up in a healthy way, this is going to be more disruptive than it is going to be helpful. And, in addition to children sometimes acting out the way this caller said that she did when they discover their parents are not trusting them or overly intrusive. There's also research suggesting that children whose parents are overly intrusive in their lives are more at risk to develop depression and anxiety-related disorders. So you may be trading one set of problems for another if you don't strike the right balance.
Jessica, good luck with that two-year-old.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Lawrence Steinberg, thank you for your time.
Sure, thank you.
Lawrence Steinberg is a professor of psychology at Temple University, the author of The 10 Basic Principles of Good Parenting, and he joined us today on the phone from Pittsburgh. When we come back from a short break, Queen Lizzie, King Phil, and one heck of a naval battle, rewriting the history of the Spanish Armada. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.